All right, here we are again for another episode of Drummer Nation Live, and I have a distinguished panel here. First of all, starting with my co-host, Adam Nussbaum. How are you, brother?
All systems go, Chief.
You've been traveling all over. We did one in January. I don't think we did one at all in February.
Yeah, I've been running around a little bit on the more on the domestic scene, which has kind of been a nice thing without having to cross the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And just glad to be able to make some music with people.
I hear you. Well, we have two legends in the room today with our guest today, Ed Soaf. How are you, my friend, Ed?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Ed and I have gotten to be really good friends over the last several years. He's done my show before. I suggest you look at one of those. I'll try to put that in the show notes so you can see it. But the reason we're talking today is Ed posted sort of a manifesto to Facebook a week or so ago that caused a lot of stir. And I wanted to talk about some of it with him. It's called 50 Years of Random Thoughts About Practicing, Playing, and Improvising on the Drum Set. And it reminds me a little bit of the old series that Roy Burns used to do for Modern Drummer called Concepts, because it went on for years and he never, like in this thing you wrote, there's not any musical notation in there. There's not any right hand does this, left foot does that. It's all about how to be a functioning musician drummer on this planet playing music. And it's just fabulous, Ed. What made you decide to do that?
I retired. And I just started going through all these old notebooks that I kept while I taught, where I'd write stuff down. Just put it all in one place. And it's a work in progress. I'm still thinking about stuff. Yeah.
Well, that place right now, it's posted to your Facebook site. Is it anywhere else?
I don't know.
Well, a lot of people have lifted it and forwarded it and
shared it.
That's what it's for.
I mean, there's nothing new in there. That's all been said by other musicians, I'm sure, only in different ways. It's like there's only so much you can say, I think.
But it's so well stated and so succinctly put. Well, I asked all of us to come up with several things because this goes on for, I don't know, four or five pages. And I wanted to pick a few things from it, from each of us, and discuss them. Adam, you want to get us started?
Well, one of the things that I really like is that Ed makes the point that when you're first starting to do something that you haven't done before, you seem to think right away, wow, this is really hard. Well, it's not hard. It's new. And when anything is brand new and fresh, it requires a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, study in order to get it to be naturally assimilated within what you do as a musician, or, you know, anything we do in life. I mean, I think of the analogy of when we were babies and we're seeing people walking and talking. We just didn't get up, start walking and running around. You know, we had to use a lot of effort and concentration to get that together. And I think that that's a very good point, because a lot of times people get turned off when they try to do something initially and they don't succeed. And particularly in the times that we're living in, where everybody just expect they can ask Google or ask Siri and get the instant answer. And things as far as playing an instrument and learning about this music is a lifelong process. You can't Google this stuff. It takes time and effort. And I think, you know, Ed, you know, stating that point is very good. It's just as far as taking some of the pressure off that people put on themselves.
Mm-hmm. And none of this, I mean, you can read the concepts and go, yeah, sure, that makes sense. But you have to internalize it. And it takes a lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of listening.
Can I say something about that?
Absolutely.
You know, I find that practicing should be just as improvisational as you want to play. And what I found very helpful for myself and things that I've passed on to the students is that when something goes haywire, if you're working on something and it's not what it's supposed to be, don't stop, play through it. And the point here being that you've got to go with what your brain initially wants you to play. In other words, start out from a position of familiarity. And it's not a mistake. It's your brain saying, hey, wait a minute. It's more comfortable for me to do this, even though it's not what I'm trying to do. It's a starting point. The starting point should never be the exercise itself, because you'll never get past the starting point. You start the exercise, something goes wrong, something changes, you keep playing and play through it. The point being here that when you finally do achieve the exercise that you initially started out to play, you've already got a basket full of variations of it that you discovered in the process of letting your brain work in its own time and develop its own approaches to where you finally get to the desired result. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. One thing you laid on me some time back that I thought was great was you told me, you said, I don't teach drums, I teach improvisation.
Yeah, exactly. It's thinking. It's how you think. And you can't think unless you can hear. So the first step is to get the ears open.
And as drum set
That's
players, we improvise a lot, right?
yeah. And that's the big challenge today, is because just like attention spans, how long a young person listens to something unless they're completely entranced by it from the beginning. They listen in snippets. They don't have albums anymore. They don't get the whole picture. It's like looking at one corner of a great painting instead of seeing the whole spectrum. So getting kids to listen, and I find sitting down and listening to a CD with a young person and pointing out what to listen for is a good way to get them started, because they don't know how to listen. As crazy as that sounds, they do not know, and most of their listening is recreational listening, background music, something that they listen have on their on their on their phone while they're doing their homework or something. Very rare is the young student who comes in who is so enthralled by what he hears that he or she will sit there and just listen to that, just like they were reading a book that really grabbed.
That's great. Miles used to talk about social music. You know, when
Yeah.
you're hanging out with your buddies having a beer, that's a certain kind of listening, but that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
Adam, you got another one? Or Ed, you want to throw one out?
Well,
I got
I
plenty.
just think that so much of what I learned in my own experience was monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
I'd watch people, and the age I grew up in, anywhere we went for, let's say, a social event, a party, dinner, a bar, whatever, there were bands. So
You just cut out, Adam. I missed you.
Stan,
It's
am I
back.
back?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay,
So
sorry, it
there
got
were
connected.
bands. Just pick it up from there were bands.
Yeah, there were bands, and you could see people play, you could watch the radio. There was so much on the radio as far as things to listen to. And I also found that I was captivated by this music and I had a deep passion for it. So for me, listening was a major aspect of what to do. I mean, I hear much better than I see. And
Well, you know,
Cosmo, easy now.
we're talking about jazz music we all came up with, but it applies to everything, right?
I'm talking about music in general. I listen to, I grew up with hearing all kinds of music, and I was affected by everything that went in here. The things that I liked stayed in, the things I didn't like went away. Excuse the dog,
Dogs
Cosmo.
are people too, man.
That's
So
right.
another thing that struck me is we've all heard the expression can't say it, can't play it. Or you may have been at a rehearsal where to get the phrasing right, the leader had the band sing it. And Ed mentions that in here. Sing parts before you try to play them. Sing one part while playing another. Be patient. Singing is a big deal, don't you think? not vocalizing it, but quietly singing like your inner song.
Well, yeah, I think every drummer that I've met who was considered a player can vocalize how they sound. And you just as one develops a somewhat unique style physically in playing the instrument, they also develop a unique vocal representation of that in their own scat vocabulary, basically. And I'd have a student, we'd listen, we'd use the Charlie Parker fake book for this, have them learn how to scat bird heads. And it was like learning a language.
Right.
You know, ta 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 ta, or do slack do ah, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, that applies on the kit every bit as it does to the trumpet sections.
Exactly. And when it comes to other forms of vocalization, is if one is playing, say, an ostinato exercise where the feet are playing an ostinato and the hands are going to play a more independent rhythm up on top of the ostinato, see if you can sing what the hands are going to play before you actually try it.
And doesn't that singing play out big time in soloing, fours, eights, choruses?
Of course.
I
And
mean,
you know
that's.
what's interesting is that just studying how drummers vocalize, Ed Thigpen vocalized a lot when he played. Elvin is the most interesting of all because Elvin vocalized in the spaces. And then Billy Higgins, also another vocalizer. So yeah, there's like you mentioned earlier, there's always that inner song going on. Haynes, I don't know about Haynes, but
I tell students that you play drums in the first place because you have that going on. You know, there's a song going in your head all the time, rhythmically, melodically, whatever. I think we all have that all the time, right? I mean, when my son was little, he would ask me something, and my wife would say, answer him, and I'd say, well, I got to finish the phrase because there's something going in there, right? I mean, we hear it all the time. Another thing I like that you said is, well, I've heard it a bunch of different ways, but you sound how you look. And we don't mean you sound handsome or ugly. We mean you sound like that
Sound
or
that
like
you sound the way you move.
way you move, right?
Yeah.
How does that transfer to sound?
Well, that's easy. I mean, compare the physical aspects of playing other instruments. How does the violinist's bow hand work? Or cellist? Do they do that? Or do they do that? And I'm not drawing a conclusion that one way is right or one way is wrong, because the death of improvisation is to say that's right and that's wrong. It's appropriate or inappropriate. Get that in your head, and that way you open your world up a little more. But yeah, you sound the way you move. It's that simple. If a string player wants to sound staccato, what kind of motions do they use? So if you
Right.
wanted to play a staccato ride pattern, look at how Jimmy Cobb moves. And if you want a legato pattern, how does a string player play legato? How does a drummer play legato ride pattern or legato snare drum comping? I mean, it's all very basic, and the foundation of the motion is the idea of that control comes from degrees of looseness. You know,
You
for
mentioned that
years,
too.
when I was in high school band, the teacher would scream at us back in the drum line saying, "Get hold of those sticks, get in control." Of course, we'd all tighten up our grips, which was the kiss of death right there. So control comes from degrees of looseness, and looseness takes the form of rebound. I mean, this is not rocket science. This is just really simple stuff. But a lot of us don't think about rebound because we only think about the part of the stroke that makes the sound, which is the downstroke. But when you play an instrument that plays a lot of rhythmic ostinatos or repetitive patterns or whatever, once you play that first note, the next note's dependent upon what you put between those two notes. It's to put it really as pedestrian as possible. It's like marching. If you march slowly, what kind of steps do you take? If you have to run, what kind of steps do you take? It's just the way the body works, how the body naturally coordinates motions to fit temporal situations.
It's funny how so many drummers can play so differently, but they're all in sync. The great ones are all in sync with their own motions
Oh
and
man,
their own flow.
it's just let your body move the way it's built. We're not put together with hinges. We're put together with balls and sockets. Military.
I'm always thinking of a flow. I always think of like the sign of like infinity. Where's the beginning? Where's the end? And when I'm playing the cymbal and stuff like that, I think like I visualize, I imagine a wave in the ocean. There's no beginning, there's no end. It doesn't go like this. And it's always easy to tighten up. And what's unfortunate is a lot of people equate concentration with tensing up.
Great
And
point.
something I've always tried to do is I spent a lot of time just trying to get as loose as possible. And I went through a period of time, and I still do it. I would be dropping the sticks.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to hold on to them enough. It's like let them work. The fingers move the stick, but let's turn it around. Let the stick move the fingers. And try to maximize your efficiency and your flow. And it's a fascinating process for sure.
I knew I saw a friend of mine was playing drums and I went to see him and he dropped his stick and he was so embarrassed. I said, man, there's never been a drummer born who hasn't dropped the stick, and it probably means you're not tensing up and you're loose and flowing, and so what? Move on.
Yeah, I would have students who were very locked down in their technique for one reason or another. And I just teach them basic molar strokes. And invariably, within a couple of weeks, they'd come in and they'd say, "What in the hell are you teaching me? I'm dropping my sticks, look like a damn fool up there now." I said, "Man, that's great." They say, "What do you mean that's great?" Because you've seen the other side of the coin finally. Now you've got this huge expanse of tight to really loose, and you've got all these degrees of grip control that you can use now. And they say, "What do you mean by that?" I say, "Well, do you use the same stroke and grip, and maybe even how you, or yeah, grip, playing a ballad at 40 as you do playing an up-tempo tune at 400? The hands are like a brass player's embouchure."
I always call it the embouchure, the way you address having the connection with the stick. That's our
Exactly.
embouchure.
That's our embouchure, and it changes
Absolutely.
according to what we're playing. Loud,
Yeah.
soft, fast, slow. Whether we're playing a part of the kit that's by nature staccato, like snare drum, or whether we're playing part of the kit that's legato, like a ride pattern. That's deep right there, man, is playing a kit that consists of simultaneously legato and staccato sounds. That's deep.
I used to ask students first lesson, I'd say it's kind of a trick question. Is this one instrument or is it a group of instruments? And the answer is, of course, it's both, right? You play a group of instruments so they sound as one instrument. And
Exactly.
that's where that touch
Talent.
comes in. Now, another thing that fascinates me, you mentioned, is reading. Because you probably had the experience where somebody says, how do you guys read on drum set? You've got four limbs going on. And they don't realize that those are for exercises. You're not reading all four limbs. But the thing that's unique about it that takes some getting used to is you're not even reading what you're playing. You're reading what the band is playing. And then you have to come up with the appropriate feel and fills and figures and all that stuff, which is based on improvisation.
Yeah. Well, and especially in regard to big band drumming, used to have guys who'd come to audition for school and they'd read everything perfectly, but they had no dynamics, and they'd be playing, say, a mezzo piano section, and at the end of that section, there was one bar that said fill, and after that one bar fill, the band came in, it was forte, and the readers would always be late and wouldn't set up the dynamic transition. The band had come in loud, and all of a sudden they'd have to get loud with it. And of course, when they got loud, all of a sudden the tempo rushed and all hell broke loose. So those were the readers. And you had the guys who came in who immediately you knew that they were primarily listeners and not readers, because they'd make reading mistakes, but they wouldn't make musical mistakes.
Great
So
point.
I'm figuring out how can you approach, put this in some form that a student understands the progression. So what I would tell my students is that you've got three areas you have to be competent in to play big band. And the first area is the easiest, reading. You're not reading melodic values, you're reading simply rhythmic values. It's, I mean, it couldn't be simpler.
There's only so many combinations, and you're going to see them all pretty soon.
And then the second thing is, what you read has to have relevance to what the band is playing. And to do that, you have to have your ears open while you read, so you know what that F or that double P means in the chart. Right? Then the third one, and this is the one that usually was the most trouble with the guys, because they've been through these god-awful books that say, here's a fill that works here, and play this fill, and play this fill. The third thing is to improvise in such a way that your fills and setups and solos sound like so much part of the chart that you want to go say, hey, let me see that drum part. Is everything written out? It all sounds so perfect for the chart. It's the way Mel played.
I was just going to say, Mel Lewis, rub a dub. Rub a
I
dub,
mean,
man.
every, I mean, every, oh, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. The nuance he had. It just blows my mind every time I hear him. Every time I listen to him, I hear something new. And I play it for the students and say, listen to this. Listen to how musical he is. Listen to what the horn. So what I make my students do is I say, I want you to learn this chart. And I say, what do you mean? I want you to come in and I'll give you 2 weeks. I want you to listen enough to this that you can sing the whole damn chart. What? And then I tell him a story about Mel. Down at the Vanguard one night, the trumpets got lost. And Mel turned around and started singing their part to him. I said, that's, not discounting his talent at all, but that's why he sounds so good. It's because he's got the music in here.
Well, once you get it internalized and you have it where you really have it, where you don't even think about it, that's when you can start to make music. I was looking at so much of what Ed had in this, dissertation as such, and I was thinking of those two psychologists, Dunning and Kruger. I don't know if you're familiar with them,
The
but
Dunning-Kruger effect.
right.
I'm not.
So
Please go on.
the initial thing is you have people, and we could talk about this on a whole other level, who are you're un you believe that you're competent, but you're really not. So you're stage one, unconsciously incompetent. Stage two, you have an epiphany. You become aware. Oh, I'm consciously incompetent. So then, stage three, you work on it. You develop conscious competence. Then you get that together enough so you're unconsciously competent. Now, we all want to live in that fourth place. But
Sure,
we
yeah.
have to do these nanosecond adjustments to things that are happening in the moment and what's going on between three and four. And it's like I'm always telling to the guys when they're playing on a gig, the younger ones, I say, don't think, pay attention. Because once you start thinking, you're getting in your own way. And we want to get to this point of this that and I thought the way they put it was pretty great. And we can relate to all this in all the aspects of things in our life. When you're first that little kid trying to learn how to walk or talk, you're putting a lot of effort in trying to figure out how to do that. and we're failing consistently, but we keep doing it. Now we don't think about these things. And what I find is for me, if I have to learn music, I want to listen to it enough so I get it in here and I don't have to think about it. You just want to be able to do it. That's why you practice. So when you get on the gig, it's like, okay, whatever's coming my way, I can just react and respond to what the music is telling me to play. And a lot of times I'm hearing people, and you can hear them. We all hear them when they go from the we mode into the me mode. But
Good
Ed,
point.
you brought up so many great points in what you wrote there, and I mean it's just nice to see it all codified and put in a very clear manner, which you are very good at doing with your articulate self.
Well, you know, one thing I've told Ed is that he has had so many great students. They're all over the place populating the industry, but none of them sound like each other and none of them sound like Ed. So he's enabled them to fulfill their musical aspirations and speak their voice in a way
I
that's not
think we're kind of
imposing.
like, I think a great teacher is kind of like all, besides giving them information, it's almost like a tour guide where you have to kind of guide people along which way to go and certain things that may help them and what to do. And I also found through some of my teachers, they also helped me learn about what not to do.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's that awareness that takes so much. It's so hard to, I don't want to say hard, it's so consuming to really master the kit and have the touch and do all these things we're talking about. But then you still have to be aware of the band. Like we've all been in a situation where it might be slowing down or speeding up a little bit. We try not to do that, but you don't ever want it to be moving and you don't know it. You know what I mean? Where you listen back and go, geez, I didn't know we did that.
Yeah, and why didn't you know?
Not
You
listening, I guess.
see,
Not focused.
I've listened to so many recordings and play along with them. And it's amazing how many great swinging recordings slow down.
They move a lot, yeah.
And there are some that speed up. So, that's another one of the what I call either or black or white, one extreme or another extreme education, where rushing is bad, dragging is bad. Not if you know it, not if it feels good, not if everybody's on the same page. And of
G
course,
Group at Carnegie Hall, 1938 or 9, I think, with that live album with Benny Goodman and Sing, Sing, Sing electrified the place. Everybody wrote about it, but it slows down a lot.
Yeah, so what can you say? I mean, the main thing to know is I don't even know. I wish I could go to Jimmy Cobb and say, how do you guys sound like you're on top of the beat when the time's slowing down? I mean, these are the great mysteries to me. Or talking to Higgins about, man, how do you play that? How do you play a legato ride pattern and at the same time play a staccato comping figure? It's just, maybe that's where the tension comes from
I
in your
like that
snare.
idea of tension.
Yeah,
You know, you take a drummer like Ringo, he's not
but
playing
there's
anything
some
super
things
comp. Go ahead.
that you have to just realize that the human being is not metronomic to begin with. And the music that we play, just like any good music, or real music, or valid music, or honest music, is an expression of the human being. And just as when you go and listen to a symphony orchestra and those strings start revving up and as the tension's building, you're not sitting there going, oh my God, they're really getting on top of the beat. No, you're going, damn, buckle my seatbelt, here we go.
Well,
Is the human factor, the emotional response.
you speak
Do
about the
nobody.
human factor. I'm on a pet peeve now against auto tuning because we're getting to the point where everything you hear on the radio has been auto-tuned and manipulated, and we're learning to hear voices that don't appear in nature. You know, this is not the way human beings sound. And they're doing the same thing with rhythm and replacing, you know, beat doctorate and sound replacement and all that. And I'm a little concerned that there's a generation of people who are used to hearing music that human beings can't play.
Yeah, probably so. It's probably going to get more use. I mean, it's all about money, obviously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can sit and fret about that sort of thing, but or you can go out into your practice room and listen to some real music and say, oh, to each his own. You know, there's nothing we can do about this. It's just a matter of sticking to one's guns. I mean, there are going to be people who are, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the hell's going to happen.
And
So,
it's changing so fast.
yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Do you think
I
there's
got
a.
to drop a
Go
good
ahead.
term that my son, who's 31 now, said to my wife and I a bunch of years ago. He said that he was a digital native,
Yeah.
where my wife and I are digital immigrants.
Yep.
And I'm very grateful having grown up at the time. And something that I think had a profound effect is when you are in the room and you are able to experience the sound. You know, I feel so grateful that I grew up in the New York area where my heroes were accessible. And being able to sit next to them and feel that energy, there's really no substitute for that. I mean, where you're just feeling the air moving and just how it feels in your body, which is something different now that's going on. You know, there's so many people now, they're just so committed to the digital domain. And it's like, what I find unfortunate is when I'm out at gigs, I'm not seeing enough young people. And I'm always making the announcement. I'll get up and I'll say, hey, let's look around the crowd tonight. We all kind of look like we're in the same age group. I say, drag the youngsters out. Let them experience the feeling of real, actual music. And it will have a profound effect on them. I mean, I know it did for all of us. We can all name numerous events that were life-changing for us. And it didn't come out of a book. It didn't come out of a, it came out of being in the room. So I think it's just important if we want to try to have this music stay alive and be a vital component in what gives us a life force and something to enjoy and good for the soul.
Let me ask you this. Is there a, you talk about the life force. I mean, we're drummers right now, right? We're not kids sitting at the kit. Is there something to that? Is it drumming? Is it a lifestyle? Is it a way of looking at the world? Is it a, I mean, we carry ourselves as drummers all the time. It doesn't turn on and off on the bandstand. Does that make any sense? Evidently not.
I don't, I've never, nobody would know I was a drummer unless I told them. You know,
Okay.
or if they heard, saw me at a gig. I mean,
I get all the gigs from my hair, actually. No, I mean, I, you know, for me, I'm trying to be a decent human being who's a good musician who plays the drums. That's kind of the way I'm trying to do it. And you know, people feel I think a sense of commitment, and they people can feel an energy. We've all seen people that play and they're very inward with what they're doing. You know, they're almost like they're afraid to project. And then there's other people where the energy is really radiating outwards. And you can feel that. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of, especially now, I'm hearing so many musicians that have so much ability, but they don't seem to have any sensibility. You know, maybe it's too much time in the practice room and not enough time out on the bandstand, you know, getting this together. So
That's kind of how
So,
I think of it, is not enough, more like clusters and flurries that are very technically advanced, but not as much musical phrases.
what I found is
That's
that
okay too, though.
the best or the most accomplished, I won't say the best, but the most accomplished and the most musical young players that I've encountered. I do a lot of playing with students from the university here at the house. The ones who sound play with the greatest maturity are the ones who have listened the most to the roots of the music and who know the repertoire. You go back, trumpet player comes in, you say, "What do you think of Louis Armstrong?" And if they say, "Oh yeah, he's the father of jazz," and I say, "No. What do you think of his playing?" "Oh well, I don't really know." And I said, "Well, I worked with a trumpet player named Clark Terry. And one time we were at a festival and Dizzy Gillespie was there. And Dizzy came into the dressing room where Clark was. We're all sitting around. And Clark started talking about Louis Armstrong. And Dizzy said, "Yeah, you remember that chorus he took on such and such?" And Clark goes, "Yeah." And he started singing it. And Dizzy joined in and they sang it together. I'm going, "Damn, there it is right there. That's how you learn. That's the tradition." And it's the sort of thing where it's just a story that sort of illustrates what you're dealing with here is there was a great drummer named Tiny Khan, Norman Tiny Khan, and very influential. Unfortunately, he died when he was 30 years old, but he influenced Mel's generation. Incredible, incredible influence. And there was an article about him in Modern Drummer that Burt Corral wrote years ago. And a student came in and I said, "Hey, have you seen the latest Modern Drummer?" They go, Yeah. I said, "Did you see the article about Tiny Khan?" He goes, "Yeah, I saw it." I said, "What'd you think of it?" And he said, "I didn't read it." And I said, "Why didn't you read it?" And he said, "I didn't know who he was." You ready
Sorry
for
to
that?
laugh. Sorry to
You
laugh,
ready for
but
that? And I said to the student,
that's
"What
why
do
you
you do?"
read it.
"Yeah, what do you do? Re are you re God, do you only read what you know? Do you only eat one food every day? I mean, for Christ's sake, look at yourself, man. God." Yeah. Or the other one is I had a deal with my students that I would play recordings that greatly influenced me, and they in turn would play recordings that are currently influencing them, so I could stay up to date somewhat to what's going on. So I put on Mahavishnu Intermounting Flame, and this kid is going, "God, who is that?" And I said, "Have you ever heard of Billy Cobham?" He goes, "Yeah, I've heard of him." I said, "Well, now you've really heard him, and he's doing this on a 4-piece kit too." He goes, "Jesus, good." I said, "Well, you're blown away, right?" He said, "Oh, I'm blown away. I got to check it out. I got to check." Well, I said, "You got an internet? There's no, it's going to be easy to check him out." He says, "I'm going to do it, man. Thanks, Ed, for turning me on to you." Boom, boom, boom. So I wait 2 or 3 weeks. Kid comes in for his lesson. And I said, "So what more have you found that you like about Cobham's playing?" Nothing. And I said, "Well, I got the impression that you were really blown away and enthused and inspired by his playing." "Oh yeah, man, I know, but I don't have the time." So my reply is, "You need to change your major now because you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time." And
Where's
Billy
his passion?
Billy, I would always tell him, "You know who your competition is?" He goes, "Who?" "Billy Cobham."
That's right.
So yeah, this just, and the students who would get turned on, I mean, I'd had students who'd come back with entire discographies. Jim White, great example. Man, Jim just, he couldn't get, he's got everything Mel even thought about recording. So
He's hungry. You gotta be hungry for this.
So yeah, knowing the roots of why we play the way we play. And I've got the affirmation for that from none other than Max Roach. when Mac ran into Max at an airport, and we sat down and talked, and he said, "What are you doing in Columbus?" And he had flown into Columbus, Ohio for Sweets Edison's funeral. And I said, "Well, I was teaching a drum set workshop." He turned and looked at me. "What are you teaching those kids?" I said, "Oh, geez." So I had my little CD wallet with me, and I opened it up and pulled out my Baby Dodd CD, talking drums, talking and playing drums. And there you go. There you go. There you go. And Max goes, "Very good. Very good." So, yeah, I mean, it's right there. And I'd have students who'd get turned on by Baby Dodds, and they'd go transcribe all the Baby solo stuff that's on that recording that Adam's showing. And that's another great one, the Joe Jones, the
Yeah, that's great
drummer.
too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You
So,
know, the things that these gentlemen speak about, it's timeless. I mean, it's like when Baby Dodds is talking about, "Well, you know, you got to play for the benefit of the band. Hello, thank you, good night, Irene." That's it.
And you can't play with an evil spirit either.
Right. Yeah, you got to be create the good spirit, the good energy for the band.
Amen. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun.
It's
It's
just the
all,
way it's put together, you know, because to me, it's like when you hear anybody great in any style, first you're going to hear a sound. And hopefully it's going to be a pleasing sound. Then you're going to be aware of the time, how does it feel? And then all this stuff with vocabulary. You know, I find it's interesting for me. They still haven't figured out how to transcribe feel.
Like, yeah, just like they can't transcribe intonation. Yeah, amen.
I was
Yeah,
listening to
that's
somebody.
why it's still such an oral process. I mean, I love it when there were these people that were like, you know, like classical music snobs, and they went up to Errol Garner, who could play anything in any key, in any tempo, and didn't read a note. And they kind of went up to him and they said, "Mr. Garner, is it true you don't read music?" And he goes, "Nobody's coming to hear me read." And it's just,
Well
it's
said.
so, it's very fascinating. Yes, Cosmo.
Well, the article is 50 years of random thoughts about
It's
practicing,
so
playing, and
great, Ed.
improvising on the drum set. And
Thank
you can
you.
get an idea of what's going on in that from this. And you'll notice none of us talked about any of the normal technical do this, don't do that. It's all about me making music as a professional musician. And it's just wonderful, Ed. I can't wait for you to continue. Are you going to publish something? This is how you're putting it out this way? It's, yeah, great. Great. Well, I encourage everybody to check it out. Anybody got anything else they want to tag in with this?
Well,
Well,
thanks for
I
the
just
opportunity.
remembered Persip had a book that he wrote, a little book called How to Not Play the Drums.
That's right. That's a great book.
Fantastic.
Kenny
Hey,
Werner's book, Effortless Mastery. That's another great book. Roy Burns had me read one called The Inner Game of Tennis, I think it was. No, Zen and the Inner Game of something, or Inner Game of Archery.
Yeah, that was a big thing for a while back in the 70s. You got to be careful with some of that stuff because the methodology sort of shoulders the music out of the way. But the most important thing said in this session came from Adam, as far as I'm concerned, and that is that it's all about the ears. Not about the eyes, it's about the ears. And the problem of big problem that I see with a lot of folks is that they have great passion for the music and for the instrument, but for some reason their passion is not matched by aptitude. Their ability to play the music with the same focus as their passion. And those are the people who can play drums for the rest of their lives for fun, but who are supporting themselves as lawyers and doctors and etc. But that's always a really difficult situation with a student where, well, that's a whole nother ball of wax, is where someone just eats, sleeps, drinks, drums, and they sit down behind the kit and it's like, hello, there's just nothing happening. And that's probably for me as a teacher, or for any teacher, to find a way to balance that without harming the student, making the student feel bad or make them disappointed, is but to make them realize that getting on the cover of Modern Drummer or having 10 million hits on Instagram is not what it's all about anyway.
I'll leave you with this. It was in a movie, New York, New York, where Robert De Niro was a tenor player right after World War II. It's a Scorsese film. And I said, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "Well, I just want my major chord." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, I want to be able to play music I believe in, somebody to share my life with, and enough money to live comfortably."
Amen.
That's all we need, right?
Yeah.
I heard a good acronym for the word process that I just found in my phone. I was looking for something else, but I found this: process, play, react, organize, create, exert, strive, and sail.
I like the sale part.
Process. And the other one was, I think, score, which was, I think, from Agassi's coach. It was like, self-discipline, confidence, optimism, relaxation, enjoyment.
Supposed to be
These things
fun, right?
over. It's a, well, that's why they say play music.
That's right.
Play. I mean, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be something joyful. And
I'm working tonight.
nobody,
What are you doing? I'm playing.
I'm pl to me, everything is the work until I get on the bandstand. Then that's the gift of the day. I get to play.
Right.
Lord knows, Ed and I, you too, how many hours we spent on airplanes?
Our buses.
Go to
My generation, it was buses.
buses, right?
Yeah, I did a lot of bus stuff too.
McNeely told me a great one when he first got on the band with Thad and Mel. When he got on the bus and he saw those two get on, they and the seat morphed into one organism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing now. So well, Ed, your words of wisdom and everything are great, and it's almost like a little Bible that you have there for people to understand. So
Well,
thank you for putting that together in such an articulate fashion.
thank you, Adam.
And thank you for doing the
Thank you.
show, both of you. I'm
All
honored to be in such august company.
I'm just working on my quarter notes.
Yeah.
I'm just working on my major chord.
All
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to let it go.
right.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you again next time on Drummer Nation.
Everybody stay well.